Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hi folks, I'm Jalene Fender and welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. I am your host. Usually we have a co-host, but it's just me today with a couple of guests. And we are going to be talking to Anna Visser with the Right to Life, and she is Director of Communications for Right to Life. And Anna, we want to welcome you to this broadcast.
Thank you for having me.
And then in the studio with me is Dr. D. Kaz. That's, what's your whole last name really though, D?
It depends on which side of the family you're talking to, Jalene, so I stay out of it. It's my husband's name, and I abbreviated it to Kaz, and that's where it's staying.
Okay. And Dr. D is an obstetrician, and she is joining us. We are talking about, well, regarding abortion, you know, that Roe versus Wade was overturned with the Supreme Court, and then we had the last election because of the overturn of Roe versus Wade. Many states, including Michigan, had these proposals regarding about abortion. And that's what we're going to cover today. And so before we get started, though, let's have a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we always come to you thanking you that you love us so much and you forgive us so much. And Lord, we know that you are pro-life because you are the creator. And Lord, we know that you give us forgiveness, too, for decisions that we may have made that don't go along with what you want. We just pray, Lord, that you would bless this program, bring to mind the things that need to be talked about and discussed, and that our listeners will be blessed. We ask this in your name. Amen. So, Anna, let's just first start off about the history of abortion. Pre and post 1973.
Sure. So I can talk about the history of abortion for Michigan specifically, if that's all right. So starting in 1846, we had laws on abortion in Michigan saying that it was illegal to have an abortion. Those laws were updated in 1931 just to change the penalty for someone performing an abortion. So these laws pertain to whoever performs abortion and not to who is receiving the abortion. And then in 1973, obviously all of those laws were put on the back burner because Roe v. Wade was ruled upon, and that made it so that every, you know, state in the U.S. had abortion legal to 24 weeks. And so since 1973, abortion has been legal in Michigan. And then this past December last year, we heard about the Dobbs case. And then on June 24, it was overturned, meaning that each state could now decide their own abortion laws. And so Michigan still had this 1931 law on the books, making abortion completely illegal except for the life of the mother. And so in preparation for this, obviously all sides involved, Planned Parenthood, the ACLU, and then pro-life organizations were preparing for what this would mean for Michigan. And so that's where Proposal 3 came into play in January of this year.
And Dee, I wanted to ask you, because we've had some discussions since I know Dee, regarding Roe versus Wade, what is your opinion or how, what do you feel how Roe versus Wade came about?
Well, okay. Well, first off, we're going to go back a little bit farther than 1973. We're actually going to go to Connecticut back in 1965, I believe it is. I can be corrected by anyone. And what happened was birth control was just coming out at that time. And believe me, the estrogen levels in these birth control pills was astronomical. But the problem was that some states ruled you could not have birth control. It was illegal. Well, Griswold sued the state of Connecticut. Now, Griswold was married, and they would not give it to them. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And so in 65, the Supreme Court ruled that under the 14th Amendment, the right to privacy extended to the marital relationship. And so when this happened, birth control hit the market. It was amazing. Well, then we get to our next case, which was also decided on the 14th Amendment, again, the right to privacy. And also it included what was called due process, which is, it actually included like the Second Amendment, the First Amendment, because it involved this professor and several other amendments, but it was mostly the 14th, the right to privacy. And it was right about the time of Roe versus Wade in, it was like a year before in 72, and it involved birth control with a single female. Once again, the Supreme Court, based on their prior, remember, they always look at prior cases, decided that, yes, a single woman also had this right to privacy in reproductive health. And so they could not limit birth control pills to, and in fact, excuse me, I believe it was birth control foam, to a single female. So now we got these two precedents on the books about the 14th Amendment. Next year, Roe versus Wade, which actually had been in the works since about 1969. It took that long to go through the court, okay? The child had been born, it was put up for adoption, okay? And now what we have is the most interesting thing that Jelaine and I were talking about. Here is a woman, Norma McCorvey, who is called Jane Roe in the case, but she becomes pregnant. Her and her doctor are having a, quote, decision on what she is going to do, but the state of Texas says you cannot have this abortion. Well, now the government is interfering between the doctor-patient relationship. So now the relationship is the doctor-patient, not husband-wife, not premarital sex of a single female, but now we're with the, okay, doctor-patient relationship. And so they sued, and once again, they did it on the 14th Amendment, which was the right to privacy, which has always been, as I said, my most fascinating part about this whole thing. If you really look at Roe versus Wade, the decision was made on the right to privacy of your healthcare decisions.
Not about her having an abortion.
Well, that was part of it, but if that was part of it, why 4 years later is it coming to the Supreme Court? Because we need to set this precedence. And so now we have this decision, and if you look at Roe versus Wade, it was decided that on the right to privacy, the state had no business, no right to involve themselves in this woman's health care. And also, that's when we first start seeing trimesters, which Anna brought up. The first trimester was, I'm going to say, yes, abortion was totally legal. The Supreme Court said, fine, there was no viability. They separated into a second trimester, which the government did have at that time of Roe versus Wade. The individual states had the ability to regulate. Later, we see in later cases that that was extended to what concerns me the most, which is later abortions.
Okay.
So, but I do want to make sure that I say that I am 100% pro-life. Make sure I say that, but I do try to look at my patients' viewpoints also.
A little bit of history, listeners, regarding abortion and the Roe versus Wade. And so what happened now, though, after Roe versus Wade was overturned, individual states then could decide. And so now what has happened with Proposal 3? And Anna, I'm going to go with you because Right to Life had a lot to say regarding this proposal.
Yeah, so just a little background for the proposal. Once, you know, all these different players found out that this Dobbs case was coming up in the summer, they all kind of got their ducks in a row and said, okay, here is our plan. And so Planned Parenthood and the ACLU released that they were going to be proposing a constitutional amendment, and that was in January of this year. And so all throughout the spring and a little bit into the summer, we didn't hear a lot of news about it. We just knew that they were going to be planning this for November for the elections. And so, you know, once we found the language that they were proposing, we were able to get legal experts, our you know, legal teams, our lawyers all together and say, what exactly is Proposal 3? trying to do for Michigan. And so through that, it was determined that Proposal 3 was far more radical than Michigan ever wanted to be. It was going to repeal parental consent. It was going to change the definition of fetal viability. It would repeal our taxpayer-funded abortion ban that we have currently. It was going to make it so that late-term abortions were legal. Our partial birth abortion ban was going to be repealed or questioned. And so all of these, you know, underlying things that weren't explicitly stated within the language of the amendment but could be interpreted from legal experts, we determined that that was the goal of passing this amendment. And so we obviously knew that this, you know, we were going to do everything we could to stop it. So we partnered with the Michigan Catholic Conference, and then we got, I think, 20-plus coalition members in Michigan, which are pro-life organizations or churches or pregnancy resource centers, all together to try to educate as many people as possible the dangers of passing this proposal, whether you were pro-life or not.
Well, you know, that's just, I remember reading the proposal, and I'm like, what does it say? When I read it, I didn't understand. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, of course I voted no, not, you know, to have it become legal. Especially once I learned more about it. But even when I first read it, this is just me, Jelaine Fenner. If there's a proposal and I don't know what it says, I vote no. Because if I don't understand, right. How can I make an informed decision to say yes? So, Dee?
And I think also, if you looked at the wording, it was so nebulous that it could be interpreted any way that it was desired. And
well, that's what they wanted.
That's exactly what they wanted. It was so that if you were sitting on the fence on this proposal, yes or no, it was benign enough appearing that you would vote for it because, you know, if I say John's shirt is, we'll just say, cranberry. Your idea of cranberry and my idea of cranberry are two different colors. And so by making it nebulous, by saying it that way, they could grab those center votes very easily because they were not defining what their real position was.
Yeah, it's very deceiving. But Michigan wasn't the only state. There were quite a few other states. And Anna, I'm assuming you know about that too, right? Other states, they had something very similar on their books to vote on.
Yeah, I mean, I know Kansas had one a couple months before we did, and that one did not turn out well for Kansas either. I think there was a couple other states, I can't remember off the top of my head, that also were having proposals in their November elections to put abortion to their constitution. And I know most of them did pass.
Well, you know, and it's when people don't understand things and decide that want something to pass, you know, make, like you're saying, nebulous, you know, and they talk about fear. I mean, this is what you heard. Once Roe versus Wade was overturned, nobody could have an abortion. And I'm like, well, that's not true, but that's what came across the media, Dee.
And plus the fact that the part that's interesting was abortion was legal in some states prior to Roe versus Wade. You know, needless to say, I'm not going to mention any names, but I know someone that actually in 1970 went for an abortion to another state. And so it was legal, but it was, you had to travel because individual states had that right. But I think like everything, like fast food, we want to have it at the corner candy store. And we don't want to have to work for it, so we shouldn't have to go to another state. But we will for our plastic surgery.
Okay. What does this Proposal 3, though, what does right to life, you know, how does it affect you now, Anna?
Well, it actually affects almost everyone in Michigan. So it's going to affect families and women, obviously. It repeals all of the health and safety regulations that we currently have for abortion facilities. And so it's essentially saying abortion facilities can regulate themselves and make their own regulations. And unfortunately, we've seen in the past that, you know, if you can save money and cut corners, why not do it for abortion facilities? Past ones have done that, and even in Michigan and Kalamazoo, we had an abortion facility that was closed down because of that. So we know that women are going to be affected by this. Obviously, the unborn are going to be affected by this. Within the language of the proposal, it said the state can regulate abortions after fetal viability. If I think it said mental and physical health of the mother. Well, we know mental health, that's pretty broad. That basically can mean anything if you find someone to okay that for you. And then they also changed fetal viability to say that a baby that needs to go through extraordinary medical measures is not viable. And so that's going to affect, you know, NICU babies, babies that are born early. And what does extraordinary medical measures necessarily mean? Mm. So that is another broad, you know, term that's used and can affect a lot of people in Michigan. Also, like I said earlier, it's going to repeal our taxpayer-funded abortions, the ban that we currently have. And so that's going to affect everyone, all taxpayers in Michigan.
So that means that a taxpayer, any taxpayer, is helping to support abortion. So, personally, I'm against abortions. That's going against my will. That's what I would say. Right, Dee?
But the thing is your taxpayer dollars are going into a giant fund and then being distributed. But I want to go back on something that Anna said. I have my iPad in front of me. I'm desperately trying to look for the case, and maybe Anna will remember it. I believe it was Mississippi. There was actually one before Mississippi, where what they were attempting to do was to regulate the abortion clinics for what I would term as standard of care. Standard of care means somebody comes in, they check and make sure, are they sterilizing the equipment properly? Are they using the equipment properly? Are the patients being given instructions that are helpful and understood? And having taken care of some post-abortion patients, because the abortion physician comes in, performs abortion, and leaves. Any complications, infection, bleeding, emotional, are taken care of by those that are, that take care of them that are left behind. And so Mississippi tried passing a law that basically made it that the physician would have what's called admitting privileges to the local hospital. And so therefore, if they made some type of error during the procedure, they had to follow their patient and take care of them. And that's one of the biggest disconnects with this whole procedure, is that they are not accountable for the cleanliness, the infection rate. Nobody has numbers on these clinics. And the physicians who are taking care of it after the fact, because it's dispersed over such a large number of physicians, I might see one a month. Well, my partner might see one a month, and then the group that's across the street might see three a month. Well, when you start adding all of these post-infections or post-bleeding or post-retained products together, there's a standard of care that is not being met by some clinics. And the one specifically that Anna brought up, the Kalamazoo Clinic, it was downright egregious what was going on there. And when we talk about back alley abortions, that's what we're really looking at, where people are always like, oh, they're going to go in a back alley in some dirty, nasty room. What do you think was happening that it got so bad that they had to close down this abortion clinic? So I think if I go in for whatever, a knee replacement, I expect a certain cleanliness level. Why is this not expected or in any way regulated by the government in an abortion clinic is my question. And that affects every woman, including those that are pro-abortion. Why are we not asking these kind of questions?
Well, the way I see, because I have heard about people having an abortion and they end up dying.
very rare. Yeah.
But it has happened. And I mean, who knows if it was, you know, because of cleanliness, infections or something. But you wouldn't expect somebody having an abortion that they would die.
You also don't expect a mother in labor to die. It is extremely rare.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm not going to say that it's that person's fault, but I'm going to say someone should, when there is some type of complication, it should be reported, monitored, and see what the physician is doing. That is what happens in every hospital across the United States. If I was doing surgery and I had a high complication rate, you had better believe they would have me in front of the hospital board in no time at all. Mm-hmm. And this is not happening.
So, Anna, I guess a question for you, because there's abortion clinics, but then there's hospitals that do abortions. That's two different standards, right?
Right. So the abortion facilities, I believe the standard they're held up to is outpatient surgical facilities, meaning, they have to follow those standards. They have to follow those building codes. They have to get consent from the patient, tell them all of their options, explain the procedure to them, have clean equipment, and things like that. One thing I do think that's interesting is Proposal 3 actually made it so that whoever performs the abortion, whether it's a doctor, it essentially made it so that anyone can perform an abortion, because right within the language it says no one that is helping someone helping someone exercise their reproductive right can be prosecuted or held accountable for helping them.
So what I'm hearing you say is you don't have to be a doctor to do an abortion for somebody. Or a
Correct.
Physician assistant or a nurse. You don't even have to be a medical person. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's how broad this Proposal 3 was. It just said, you know, anyone has the right to help a pregnant woman, and if they do help them, they can't be prosecuted or put to trial or held accountable for whatever happens because they were helping them exercise their constitutional right.
Okay, Dee?
And first off, everything that you have said is correct. But mostly that was written in for the pharmaceutical companies. Because if you're ordering these medications online with a do-it-at-your-home kit, as I put it, and something goes wrong, which it can, normally it's bleeding, just so you know, there's retained placental products that don't separate and you have copious bleeding. That you cannot go back and say, you know, I got this from the pharmacist at X Pharmacy, and so I'm going to sue them because they didn't instruct me correctly. That was a big part of that, but no, you are correct. It is written so loose that anyone could do it. In fact, actually, Anna mentioned at the beginning of the show about the first abortion laws that were about the 1850s. Well, actually, that was done because doctors started to form the American Medical Society, and they needed to stop all these pharmacists and midwives from performing all these procedures. And so they created these laws to basically get them out of their practice.
Oh, okay.
And force the patients into them. They used to actually make poor women that were dying from an abortion give a deathbed confession before they would treat them. That's how, you'll have to excuse me, how warm and fuzzy us doctors are.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, it's, pregnancies happen, and it's sad that, you know, people then want to have an abortion, and sometimes you understand why somebody might get pregnant because of rape or something, but God allowed somebody to be created. And so that's my personal opinion. I wasn't always that way, because before I was a Christian and understood. Plus, back when I was young, back in the 70s, it was a glob of blood cells or something. That's, you know, what I was told. And I don't know how many women are still kind of told that. So we need to take a break, folks, and we're going to come back and talk some more to Anna Visser. She's the Director of Communications, the Right to Life, and Dr. Dee Kass, who is an obstetrician. So stay tuned. We'll be right back in just a few minutes.
The Bible and God's character are under attack like never before. Here at Strong Tower Radio, we are proud to hold up the Bible as a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path. We believe the Bible is the Word of God and contains the good news of God's character and His great plan of salvation for mankind. If you know and believe this to be true, won't you help Strong Tower Radio proclaim the truth about our God and His Word, the Bible? To do that, go to www.strongtowerradio.org, and there, on our secure website, you will find a donate button. Click on that and give as the Lord directs. Thank you for listening and supporting Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
Hi, folks. I'm Jillian Fenner, and welcome back to Strong Tower Radio today. And we have been talking to Right to Life, Anna Visser, who is the Director of Communications to the Right to Life. And also in the studio, we have Dr. Dee Kass, who is an obstetrician, and been talking about Proposal 3, what happened after the repeal of Roe versus Wade, and how things have changed. I'll tell you what, people, in this life, things are... Jesus is coming soon. I got to tell you that. And if you'd like to know more about Strong Tower Radio, you can go to str.fm. You can look up past programs we've had. You can get our newsletter. There's lots of information. So, and you can even str.fm and stream Strong Tower Radio anywhere in the world. So, Dee, let's talk about you're an obstetrician, and that's you went to school to be an obstetrician, correct?
I went through residency.
Okay.
After medical school.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And I want to ask you a question. I did ask you this off air. Do most obstetricians, do they do abortions?
No.
No. Because I guess I'm just thinking, you're seeing life, you know? And I just can't see that an obstetrician would destroy life. Now, it doesn't mean that they might not, but...
Well, now we're going to cross over with, yes, I have very strong opinions on being a pro-life person, a person that believes God created us. He created us in His image. And so from the moment of conception, you have, when you look at the odds of it, which are astronomical, we cannot fathom, that when this half set of chromosomes from the man join with the half set of chromosomes from the woman, and this little one cell can figure out how to make an eye, some lungs, walking, talking, and put it all in the right spot. That in itself is watching a miracle, just from the one cell. So when you think about that one cell having that amount of knowledge, that truthfully, could I create an eye today? No, I couldn't. Okay? But God knew how to put information into one cell that it could do this and have it functioning. So the idea that when we went off air, that you had said, you know, you had the impression that, you know, this was just a blob of cells, blob of blood, whatever. That's the problem. We don't realize the science behind one cell. And we don't see the miracle in one cell. So therefore, until the baby is, quote, viable.
Well,
it's what
explain
we look
that.
At.
Explain, okay. What does viable mean?
Viable means that the fetus itself, that should it be delivered today, can by itself live. So if you had a fetus, and like I said, it's very heartbreaking. Like we've delivered like 16-week fetuses, and they're perfectly formed. It is a baby. There is no doubt. It is moving. It is trying to breathe. Of course, it can't. But there is nothing else it could be. Okay? And that people don't realize this. And I think that's part of it, is people don't see the wonder of medicine and that we are truly made fearfully and wonderfully. And it's something that no one can understand and no one can replicate. So I think that's the first thing as a physician. Then I also think that as just plainly as a woman, people do not appreciate the fact of what it takes to go through a pregnancy. Okay?
Well, men have no idea for sure.
No, they don't. They don't. But the point is it's a lot. And it is a commitment. Well, why are we not teaching our young, and I do try to do this, by the way, when I talk to young people, teach them that it is a commitment. This is not a puppy you can drop off at the pound. And that's the attitude they have right now, that it's just sort of a phase they're going through. And next week, they'll pick up, I don't know, a PlayStation instead. So I think we have lost that sacredness of life. And that's what we need to instill into people, which I know will take at least a generation to do. But I think if we tell people how important they are to the Savior, which I love Strong Tower for doing that, make sure I say that. I think Strong Tower is a great radio station, and I love the fact that you stream. My husband and I listen to it in Tennessee. That I think that's the steps we need to do, is to bring people closer to Christ, be it they're a physician, be it they're a woman, be it they're a man. By the way, John's also in the station with us, and John is taking care of all the technicals here. Even Roe versus Wade was important to men because of the right to privacy. They have a right to talk to their physician privately and make decisions privately. So it really was important when it got overturned for men also. So I'm not calling men that talk about it misogynistic. But I think that those are the things that we need to look at. And if we did, I think we would see many things, abortion included, a different way.
But part of the problem is whether you're single or married or you're pregnant and you were not planning this, did not want this, what do you do?
Well, I have to admit, I try not to, because there is so much guilt that many of these young women have. I do not try to put a guilt trip on them by trying to talk them in or out of anything. What happened when I had the office was we would actually give them a little thing that had all the Planned Parenthood numbers on it, all the instructions, and we would just tell them, okay, here it is. And I would say, I don't do this, okay? I do not, but here is the information. Because I wanted to keep the door open, and I didn't want them to feel they didn't have someone to talk to, someone to cry after the fact. And I think that's part of it also, is how many women feel guilty after the fact.
Well, after the fact, we have heard that before. We've, you know, talked to women before
and
about that.
So I think it's important for, as a physician, not to put up this wall that, well, I'm pro-life, and so if you do this, you're a bad patient. No, it's, okay, here's your decision. I don't do it, but here's the opening for you. And, of course, if you have any problems, please come and call me. And so as a physician, I think it's very important for us to work with our patients and not try to, we can judge the sin. And I do believe it's murder, and it is wrong, but we're never allowed to judge the sinner. Only God's going to do that.
Right. And, you know, and the thing about abortion, I mean, it's a decision a woman has to make.
Yes, an individual decision.
Well, that, you know, and so that's when they say pro-choice, it is a choice. I mean, they can choose to have an abortion. They can choose not to have an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember, you know, hearing first about pro-choice, I'm thinking, yeah, it's pro-choice.
Doesn't it sound warm and fuzzy? Doesn't it sound good?
Yeah.
But it doesn't.
Pro-life is definitely life.
But I think the problem is pro-choice, they don't show them the horror of taking out something in pieces. And the fact that you're watching it on ultrasound, this child is moving, and then this long needle goes in through the abdomen, and we inject digoxin to stop the heart. Then we wait a few days, and then the abortion is performed.
So then that's like a spontaneous abortion because...
No. And actually the risk, you know, we were talking about the risk of abortion in between, and And the chance of getting infection, bleeding, damage to internal organs with that procedure, because that is when you're doing a dilatation and evacuation, okay, are extremely high. You would actually, for the patient's safety, if you didn't have some other mitigating factor, you would be better off inducing labor than to do that procedure. But for time constraints, we do it that way because it's easier for us than for the patient.
Okay. So, Anna, Michigan Right to Life, how long has Michigan Right to Life been around?
We have been around pretty much since 1973, so for the last 50 years.
Okay. And the idea, you know, Right to Life is, you know, pro-life. And so I guess that's my thing about Planned Parenthood. They don't really give you the option of pro-life. It's strictly to end life. And, you know, the right to life is, of course, we want life. But it's still a choice a woman has to make. And yeah, Planned Parenthood, I'll just say it out there, and because they've been around, it's a money-making thing. You want to address that, Anna?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I don't think that that is a hidden fact that they make a lot of money from performing abortions, and recently they've moved into abortion pills. And so, you know, that makes it even more easy for them to sell these abortions. And then they don't have to take care of the patient. They don't even have to meet the patient face to face. They and they don't have to, you know, take care of the cleanup. And so it's saving them money all the way around. So I don't think it's any secret that Planned Parenthood makes a lot of money, millions of dollars from the abortion industry, which is very sad because it's preying off of scared, most of the time scared, and scared women that don't know what to do. Maybe they want to keep the baby, but they can't afford it, or whatever reason it may be, instead of helping them through that and seeing what their options are and telling them, you know, you're a woman, you're strong enough to do this, and you don't. This isn't your only choice. This isn't your only option. They are preying upon them just to make money.
That's one thing I'm thinking about is, because I remember being young, you know, going to a Planned Parenthood, and they never gave, you know, talked to me about having, going ahead and keeping the baby or having the baby, putting up for adoption. And it's just, there's only one thing they're there for. And doesn't our government give Planned Parenthood money? I mean, so that's why I guess I had no qualms with saying it's a money-making thing. Dee?
Well, I was going to ask Anna, because truthfully, I don't know what the prices are now. But it used to be, like for a first trimester abortion was around $600. Mm. And for a second trimester abortion was up to $2,000. And I was wondering, is that still true? And if she happens to know anything on, and this is all cash from the patient. They don't accept checks, and they don't do time payments.
I actually am not sure what the current price is. Like you said earlier, I know it's more expensive the later it is in pregnancy because it's more difficult and there's a lot more risk. But I'm not sure how much they are. I know that you know, the abortion pills tend to be cheaper. Just for the fact that, you know, there's not really any cleanup or follow-up or appointments. You can basically get it online through telemedicine. So I know those tend to be cheaper, but I'm not sure the exact price that it is currently.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, of course we're biased, and we don't have a representative from Planned Parenthood to hear their side. But I did go to a Planned Parenthood one time, long time ago, and since then it's just it's gotten more prolific around the states, the Planned Parenthood, And Anna, does every state have like a right to life organization like Michigan?
Yes, I believe most of them, if not all of them, do.
Okay.
Whether how involved or how big they are, that's just, you know, depends on each state.
So, Dee, you being the obstetrician and somebody comes in, finds out they're pregnant and they didn't want to be, then, you know, you gave them information for Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. And you didn't try to talk them out of the abortion?
No, I did not. I have to admit, I did not.
Yeah.
But I did make sure they knew my stand on it,
mm-hmm.
so that we were very clear. But no, I never wanted to alienate them. So.
Right, because if they made a choice that they're going to have an abortion,
yeah,
you know, and then they'd think, well, you know, you think I shouldn't have done it. And but it's, you know, this is how wonderful God is.
Yes.
God gives us the choice to make wrong decisions. Stupid decisions.
And he leaves the door open for right. us after we make the stupid
yes.
decisions
yes.
so that we can cry on his shoulder after our yes. stupid decisions.
Yes. And I want our listeners, especially female listeners and maybe male listeners, because there's, you know, men out there that have encouraged their girlfriends, their wives to get an abortion because they weren't ready to be responsible. But, you know, even if you've had an abortion, God still loves you,
mm-hmm.
and he forgives you. And if you're doubting that, that's because the devil is telling you that you're just terrible. And that is not how our God is, because God leaves the door open. He lets us make those decisions. That's one thing that's so good about God. He gives us choice.
He does.
And we can choose to do what's right, or we can choose to do what we want, which sometimes is not right.
But by his saving power, as we are changed, what we choose is going to be what he wants.
That's right, yeah. You know, and I'm sure, Dee and Anna, you've heard stories about different people in life, in history, that their mother told them they should have an abortion. You know, whatever maybe was going on, they shouldn't have the child, and end up, we would be a deficit country, or I'm trying to think of somebody from way back when, and I can't remember the story, but I know there's different people that their mother decided not to have an abortion, and they become a very important person.
Or even one of the saddest that I was involved with was, it was a husband and wife, and they had a son, and they decided to have an abortion because, you know, they wanted one child. And very, very sad, at 17 years old, he was killed.
Their son.
Their son was killed. And it was just extremely tragic, because the mother, and so was the father, but especially the mother, and we're talking, it would be about 15 years, now was regretting that decision from 15 years ago.
Mm.
If we had not had that abortion, if we had not. But they were, at the time, well, we only want one child, and we only want, and it was, just.
So now their only child died, and they had no children.
I honestly thought they were going to get divorced. I truly did. They made it through,
mm-hmm.
but it was, yeah. I mean, you never know when something like this is going to come back at you.
Mm-hmm.
And I can still remember a family member, and she is now gone, but she regretted what she had done to the day she died. And mm-hmm. you don't know how they're going to feel post-procedure. Some people just get off the table and, you know, they're just back to doing whatever. But if they have guilt,
mm-hmm.
it's only Christ that's going to give them peace.
Yep, that's
it doesn't,
true.
I could talk to them till I was blue in the face. And the only thing that gave that woman peace after she lost her 17-year-old son was that Jesus Christ, and that she by Jesus Christ would get to see him again at the second resurrection. That was the only thing.
Yes. Well, you know, and before the election and we had these proposals, I remember hearing something on the radio, a debate going on, and it was with a woman who had 28 abortions. And I just thought, well, why aren't you on birth control or something? Because I can't imagine 28 abortions. Can you, Dee?
Yes, I can, unfortunately. But I do want to tell you that there is a huge push right now in the gynecologic field for what's called long-term birth control. These little IUDs, they have made them now that they don't have to be in the post-gravid uterus, someone who's already had a baby. So they are really trying to encourage these, actually, in our young ladies in many states. So to try to avoid the pregnancy issue, it doesn't take care of the sexually transmitted diseases, which is a huge problem. And we can go into all kinds of issues right there. But yeah, you would think after that many that someone would have figured out or told her how to avoid this problem. And think of all the money they could have saved her, because birth control pills, you can get them for like $4 a month.
Okay. Well, especially, I mean, we don't know exactly how much it costs to have an abortion. And
no.
I understand first trimester is less because maybe less risk and costs more the farther along you are. So, Anna, what would you like our listeners to know more about the Michigan Right to Life?
Well, at Right to Life of Michigan, we try very hard to make sure that we're educating people in Michigan about pro-life issues. And so we work really hard at making sure that we have handouts on basically any pro-life issue you can think of. We have a handout for that. We also work really hard to get pro-life candidates into office every election cycle. And we also work very hard with our legislators to get pro-life laws introduced. And so those are our main missions here at Right to Life of Michigan. And, you know, just because Proposal 3 passed definitely changes things here in Michigan for sure. But we plan to continue our mission of, you know, working towards having abortion be the unthinkable thing to do in Michigan, making sure that women feel supported through our pregnancy resource centers, making sure that people are educated about this topic.
Well, that's one thing with this Proposal 3. I mean, one of the things that I think is just, it's a terrible proposal, the whole thing, but that a minor can have an abortion without their parents' consent. That does not make any sense to me. And even if I was pro-choice, I'm not sure I'd want my 16-year-old daughter going and having an abortion, and I didn't know it. That just, I mean, once somebody's 18, they're an adult, they can make their own decision. But if it's my child, I should still be the one that is controlling, knowing what's going on. And so, Dee, in your practice, anytime you might have had somebody under 18, though, you had to talk to them. Parent.
Yes, absolutely. We'll just pretend, which I did not do, but we'll just pretend something as simple as appendicitis, or we're going to repair a sports hernia. You have to have the parent's consent, and you have to go through all the risks and complications that are possible. Yet, here you are with a life-changing event, and in order for her to have that life-changing event, she had to be having intercourse, which also puts her at risk for other things. And then the discussion of birth control, which is a third problem. And it just spirals out of control, and yet the parent is unaware.
Yeah. Well, I'm praying Michigan Right to Life, these are issues that you are going to be addressing. And like you said, you want to get Right to Life legislators, you know, involved. So if people want to contact the Michigan Right to Life, I'm assuming you have a website, a phone number, or if somebody wants to call and talk to you, Anna, because they heard you on the radio, is that something that they can do?
Yes, of course. Our website is rtl.org, and our phone number is 616-532-2300. We have a ton of different information on our website, lots of educational resources, all the different pro-life laws that we currently, well, after Proposal 3, we will not have. But any information, any history in Michigan in pro-life movements or laws can all be found on our website.
Okay. And so if somebody wanted to, if they wanted to contact you personally because they heard you, they call, what is that number again?
It is 616-532-2300. And actually, if anyone, you know, we have sign-ups for volunteering, and we also have a spot to donate because we are doing our rebuild and renew online gift matching right now through December 31st. And so there's also a spot right there on the website for that as well, and we would really appreciate that.
So are there, like, many chapters around the state?
Yes. So Right to Life of Michigan has, I think it's a little under 100 local affiliates. And so most of the cities and towns in Michigan has a Right to Life affiliate. These affiliates are in charge of doing all of the outreach to their churches and their communities and their schools. And so our local affiliates do a really great job of gathering their volunteers, going to different events, and just making sure that their local communities are educated on pro-life issues.
All right. Well, I thank you, Anna.
You're welcome.
We want to thank Michigan Right to Life, and you're, and like with Dee, you talking, it's education, so people understand exactly what an abortion is, for one thing.
I think that's part of it. They do not understand what it really involves. And number two, I think that they do not understand the basic science that one egg, that one cell, is an entire person. It doesn't start at 28 weeks. It started the moment those two little cells came together and formed that one cell.
Creation.
It will be nothing else but a child. It will never be anything else. Oh. It's truly amazing.
Well, listeners, I pray that you've been blessed by this. And I pray that you're a pro-life citizen, that you are. Stand up for life. And if you have any questions, you can go to the Michigan Right to Life, which is rtl.org, their website, and get more information. Thank you for listening today. Bye, folks.
About to experience are true. They will change your life if you let them. For they come from the very heart of God. He loves you, and He is the Father you have been looking for all your life. This is His love letter to you. My child, you may not know me, but I know everything about you. I know when you sit down and when you rise up. I'm familiar with all your ways. Even the very hairs on your head are numbered, for you were made in my image. In me you live and move and have your being. For you are my offspring. I knew you even before you were conceived. I chose you when I planned creation. You were not a mistake, for all your days are written in my book. I determined the exact time of your birth and where you would live. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. I knit you together in your mother's womb and brought you forth on the day you were born. I have been misrepresented by those who don't know me. I am not distant and angry, but am the complete expression of love. And it is my desire to lavish my love on you, simply because you are my child and I am your father. I offer you more than your earthly father ever could, for I am the perfect father. Every good gift that you receive comes from my hand, for I am your provider and I meet all your needs. My plan for your future has always been filled with hope, because I love you with an everlasting love. My thoughts toward you are countless as the sand on the seashore, and I rejoice over you with singing. I will never stop doing good to you, for you are my treasured possession. I desire to establish you with all my heart and all my soul, and I want to show you great and marvelous things. If you seek me with all your heart, you will find me. Delight in me, and I will give you the desires of your heart, for it is I who gave you those desires. I am able to do more for you than you could possibly imagine, for I am your greatest encourager. I am also the Father who comforts you in all your troubles. When you are brokenhearted, I am close to you. As a shepherd carries a lamb, I have carried you close to my heart. One day, I will wipe away every tear from your eyes, and I'll take away all the pain you have suffered on this earth. I am your Father, and I love you even as I love my Son Jesus. For in Jesus, my love for you is revealed. He is the exact representation of my being. He came to demonstrate that I am for you, not against you, and to tell you that I am not counting your sins. Jesus died so that you and I could be reconciled. His death was the ultimate expression of my love for you. I gave up everything I loved that I might gain your love. If you receive the gift of my Son Jesus, you receive me. And nothing will ever separate you from my love again. Come home and I'll throw the biggest party heaven has ever seen. I have always been Father, and will always be Father. My question is, will you be my child? I am waiting for you. Love, your dad. Almighty God.
For more information about the Father's Love Letter, go to fatherslovesletter.com. That's fatherslovesletter.com.